The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So tonight I thought of talking about stabilizing the mind. This is kind of a nuts and bolts kind of talk. How do we stabilize the mind? What does it mean to stabilize the mind? So let's just start there. What is a stable mind, and why is that helpful in our meditation practice and in our lives? So a way I think about a stable life, or a definition, a stable mind is a mind that is able to meet whatever's happening without being kind of knocked off its balance. So a stable mind is a mind that is not reacting to things in its habitual way, moving towards greed, aversion, or confusion. So the stability of mind is one that can navigate the world without kind of feeling like I have to fix this or change this or get rid of that, or you know, just kind of things are really confusing and uncomfortable and unpleasant. That's a kind of a reactivity to what is happening. Well, that's what I think of as a stable mind. A stable mind is a mind that is able to be present and aware with what's happening without habitual reactivity, and yet able to respond from a place of wisdom, compassion, kindness. And so when I say non-reactivity, sometimes people think that means not doing anything. What I mean by non-reactivity is not being buffeted around by external things, but having a kind of a sense of groundedness, rootedness within yourself that isn't being knocked around, isn't being pushed around. So this is helpful for our lives, because so often in our lives we are responding habitually. And so much of the ways that we struggle, the ways that we suffer, the ways that we end up in pain have to do with reactivity in our minds. So, for instance, if there's, you know, something that happens in the world, somebody does something, cuts you off on the freeway, something like that. This is an action. It's something that's happened in the world. It's something that's happened in the world. And very often we end up reacting to that. We end up angry, perhaps yelling in our cars or throwing some kind of a gesture. We end up with a mind that is tight, constricted, frustrated, angry. And so that experience is not it's not one that's in the terrain of well-being, I would say. And essentially, I would say that the stable mind has much more access to well-being. So the non-reactive mind might, in that situation of seeing somebody come and cut you off, back off on the accelerator as a response to that. Perhaps notice a sense of you might notice some responses coming up. You might notice a sense of fear if somebody's pulled in really close to you. So you might notice that. But you might also just be able to respond to that sense of fear with a sense of, okay, what can I do skillfully here to keep myself safe? So that would be a more balanced mind, a more stable mind. It might be that, you know, in seeing that kind of, I've had this happen before. There was during a recent non-residential retreat I taught here. We were focusing on relationship. We were looking at recognizing that we're constantly in relationship with all kinds of people, not just with the people we have intimate connections with or work connections with or professional connections with. But at one point I was driving down the freeway and realized this was a community, this community of cars driving down the freeway together. And I did have it as a situation where somebody was kind of weaving. And what I had a sense of in that moment was that person being disconnected from the community of people sharing the space together and basically being so absorbed in their own world that they were disconnected from the relationship. And to me that felt very, my heart broke a little bit. So this can also be a response with a mind that's a little more stable to a situation like that. And so it's not that we're just like lumps on a log when things happen in the world, but so often an unstable mind, a mind that's reactive, is focused outward on the world and wanting the world to be how we want it to be, wanting the world to change to be so that I'll be okay, as opposed to looking at how can I be okay with whatever is happening right now in the world? How can I find a place of well-being with whatever is happening in this very moment, with actually whatever has already happened in this moment? Because that's what we're reacting to often, is what has already happened. And then with that place of recognizing, this has already happened, can I be okay that this has already happened? Then making a skillful response to step forward into the next moment, which may mean taking some kind of action, responding to the situation as opposed to reacting. So I look at a stable mind as being a mind that supports responsiveness rather than reactivity, skillful responsiveness rather than reactivity, not only in our meditation practice, but in the world as well. So the stable mind, you know, the stability of mind as a factor in our minds is related to the factor of concentration in the Noble Eightfold Path. The mind that is able to be present over time, basically. That's a definition of concentration. A mind that can stay in the present moment, can stay aware without being pulled out into thought or reactivity or anger or confusion. The mind that can stay present is a mind that is concentrated, is a mind that's stable. Concentration is a funny word. I mean, often when we hear the word concentration, we think it means like, you know, narrow, focused, you know, tight somehow. That word evokes that sense to us somehow. But the experience of samadhi, which is the Buddhist term for what is usually translated as concentration, is more of a sense of stability, of collectedness, of those are two good words. Collectedness, stability, composure. That's another good word, composure. And actually, Gil pointed out at one point that the word composure is in its roots, the etymology of the word composure is very similar to the etymology of the Pali word samadhi. Because the word samadhi has two parts, the sam, and adi. And sam basically means with. And the adi is basically to stand. And so samadhi means to stand with. Compose, the com part means with, and the pose part means stand. So compose means to stand with, To be composed means to stand with. So really, composure is a pretty good word to translate that word, samadhi. And so what does it mean to compose the mind, to stabilize the mind? It means to find a way to encourage the mindfulness, the awareness of what's happening in the present moment, to become more continuous. So there's two basic ways to strengthen this. We explored both of them in the meditation. There's two kind of, you know, actually we kind of explored a middle way in there too, a middle ground for cultivating this. The most common way that people think of concentrating the mind or stabilizing the mind so that it's not going to be running all over the place is to pick some experience, like the breath, and to try to keep the attention settled and stable with the breath. Anytime the mind wanders off the breath, let go of where it's gone and come back to the breath. This is an incredibly helpful practice. Very, very helpful practice. I think one of the main reasons, there's a lot of reasons it's helpful. It helps us to recognize the things that pull us out of the present moment because we have some kind of a yardstick or, you know, something that's kind of pointing out to us. You know, we're saying, okay, yep, this is what I'm going to do right now. I'm going to put my attention on the breath. I'm going to stay with the breath. And because we have that agenda or that intention to stay with the breath, it's fairly easy to notice when we've gotten lost. It's fairly easy to notice when our mind has gotten pulled out of the present moment, when it's lost contact with the experience. So the attention gets lost, we recognize that, and if you're doing this over a course of time, you probably begin to see patterns, ways that your mind habitually exits stage left. You know, just, oh, there it goes again, you know. Just so there are kind of familiar ways that our mind tends to leave the present moment. So as you play with staying with one experience, you probably start to get familiar with this. Kinds of thoughts, patterns of thought or emotion, usually they're connected with some kind of emotion. Some people might find that their mind goes into the past, remembering things from the past, remembering old stories of, you know, you done me wrong kind of stories, or how could I have done that better kinds of stories. You know, so the mind goes to the past, trying to revise the past or figure out how things could have been better in the past. Sometimes that's related to remorse or regret. Sometimes it's related to anger. Sometimes it's related to greed. Gosh, if I'd only done that, I would have had great things going on right now. So, you know, the mind can go into the past for many, many different reasons. And so beginning to get familiar with these as you kind of try to keep your attention in the present moment. And so the practice of keeping your attention on an experience like the breath, the purpose isn't solely to cultivate that stability of attention on the breath. It's also to start to learn about our minds, to start to learn about what takes us away, and to begin to see if it's possible to let go of those energies that take us away, those habitual energies of planning. You know, that sometimes our minds go into the future in planning mode, or they go into the past in anger mode. And so we start to see that the habits of mind, and we also can begin to practice what it might mean to set that aside for now. Partly because often we see, you know, when our mind goes off into those stories, that those are not happening right now. We wake up in the present moment. We wake up remembering, oh right, I'm at IMC right now. I'm meditating, and I'm not actually having that conversation with that person, and I don't actually have to right at this moment plan that event for tomorrow. So maybe I can let that energy go, and come back to just rest with the breath for a little while. And so we begin to learn what it means to let go of some of those habitual energies that pull us out of the present moment. That's another reason why that practice is so helpful. It also begins to help us to recognize what it means to actually be in the present moment. What does it mean to be present? I mean, for me, I'd sit down when I first heard about meditation. I'd come to these classes and I'd go on retreats, and teachers would say things like, just feel a sense of presence. I was like, what the heck do they mean? I have no idea what that means. I don't know what it means to feel a sense of presence. If somebody said, pay attention to your breath, it's like, okay, I can do that. And so we can start to get familiar with what it means to be present, connected to some particular experience. And over time, we begin to learn. And for me, it actually took a while to begin to understand, what does that sense of being here, that sense of awareness, the sense of being awake, feel like? Separate from the experience of staying connected with the breath. So we begin to get a sense of what it feels like to actually be aware and awake. And the thing I often explore with people here is, because for me, the place where I learned this was in that moment when the mind had wandered off of the breath, it had gotten lost, and at some point, awareness returned, and I remembered, oh, right, I was paying attention to the breath. I'm not paying attention to the breath anymore. That moment when mindfulness returned, I began to get curious in that moment right there, because in that moment, I wasn't paying attention to the breath, but awareness was back. It was back enough that I could say, oh, let me reconnect with the breath. And so I began to get curious about that moment right there. When the mind wandered off but woke up, what is that moment like? And that began to instruct me about what being present was like, what the experience of presence, what the experience of being mindful, of being aware was. And so that's a really great exercise, because often when we have the agenda or the intention to stay with the breath, for instance, with a particular object, particular experience, when we notice that our attention has wandered off and we wake up, it's like the very first thing, our first response is often, oh, I forgot, come back to the breath. And so we kind of yank our minds back to the breath in that mode. And so what I'd like to encourage you is, rather than having that kind of relationship, that when you notice that you've forgotten, that moment of remembering, the moment that you remember about mindfulness again, when you're paying attention to an experience like the breath, when you notice that, just take a moment to take in, awareness is back. And as I suggested in the guided meditation, it can be really helpful in that moment to see what has happened to the body and mind. What has happened to the organism, given the fact that your mind had been wandering around? You'd lost touch with being present. The mind had wandered off, probably into some habitual pattern, maybe into an argument or a fantasy or into a plan, an anxious plan, to just check in that moment. How are you in that moment? Having had the mind been wandering, sometimes you'll find that there's been a little tension that's crept in, especially if the mind has been off in a habitual reactive pattern. Very often there's bodily tension that comes in. And so you can use that moment, relaxing again, before you kind of gently come back and reconnect with the breath. So all of these things begin to help to stabilize the attention. The attention begins to stabilize because we're bringing our attention to one experience. The attention begins to stabilize because we're learning what our patterns of mind are that take us away from the present moment, and we're learning how to gently let go of those. Another way this supports the stability is that as the mind starts to land and rest with that experience of the breath, for instance, so it connects with it more gently, fully, for a longer stretch of time, it's pretty uniform in human experience that as the mind can rest on the breath, not try to force itself on the breath, but as it can rest on the breath, the mind really, really likes this experience. It's a feeling of well-being. It's a feeling of the feeling of settledness, collectedness, composure is a felt sense that feels very good. Actually, sometimes it feels really, really good. Sometimes I've had the experience with the mind settling for a longer stretch of time on the breath. It just feels like all my cells are lined up and pointed in the same direction. Like the body is like singing, yes, this is how a body and mind can be in the world. So the practice of the staying with one experience can support this stability of mind. And yet that practice of staying with one experience is a practice that generally is one that can be practiced in formal meditation. If you get very skilled at it, it's sometimes possible to carry it into activities. But at the same time, the attention has to broaden when we're engaging in the world of activity. Kind of like I was describing at the end of the guided meditation, you're kind of in touch with the breath, and yet you're also aware there's sound, there's other body sensations, there's emotions. So that's possible to get to a place in your meditation where you can, and in your life, where you can carry this thread of the breath through your life. It does require this capacity of mind to be receptive and non-reactive to the things, the other experiences that arise, and able to be present for those experiences. So that first kind of meditation practice, stay with one experience, that's a practice of letting go of whatever is not that experience. It's like breath, not breath. Let go of not breath and come back to the breath. And so in that kind of meditation practice, we're not developing as much skill in being present for things other than the breath. And so the other form of stabilizing the mind is one where it's much more related to the non-reactivity. It's basically it's stabilizing the awareness so that it's not kind of leaping out of the present moment, reacting to what's happening, but able to stay present, grounded, aware, awake, without moving into that, you know, reactivity of greed or aversion, being knocked off balance by whatever comes in. And so this is a practice of starting to explore what it means to be aware of the flow of experience of life. What it means to be aware of just moment to moment. What's the most obvious thing right now? So this is a practice of really letting go of control. In the first practice, we're essentially cultivating a sense of being able to control the attention to stay with one experience. In this second practice, we are cultivating, can the attention stay stable? Can the awareness stay stable with whatever comes into our lives? And so towards the end of the meditation, we began opening that up a little bit, starting from, you know, just keeping the touchstone of the breath, but beginning to recognize there's other things going on, hearing and body sensation and emotions and thoughts, but staying with the breath a little bit. And then I suggested that you could try letting go of the breath and just seeing what's happening now. What's happening now? What's happening now? Right now, just play with this for just a few moments. Close your eyes, or you don't have to close your eyes, actually. Just what's the most obvious experience right now? I'm aware of pressure. I'm aware of seeing. I'm aware of hearing. I'm aware of relaxation. Try it for just, I'll give you 30 seconds. Just say to yourself, I'm aware of, and what's obvious? Sometimes that this kind of practice takes some skill at being okay with being out of control, because sometimes our minds, you know, definitely this happened for me the first time my teacher suggested I do this kind of practice and let go of being in charge of what I was paying attention to. My mind just went, I can't do this. And it would like just go out trying to find things to be aware of rather than being able to settle back and just like, you know, your mind is going to find something to be aware of. If you don't pick something, the mind will pick something. But it took me a while to get comfortable with that lack of control in the meditation. So it is, it can be a little bit scary to let that go, but sometimes it can also be very relaxing. Because it is a much less effortful kind of practice. Actually, right now, you know, can you be aware of your feet? You know, can you be aware of your hands? What's the most obvious experience to you in your body right now? The pressure of your butt, seeing. So what's obvious now? What's obvious? There's something that is obvious in the moment. We don't have to go searching for it. We can simply settle back and receive. So we, in this kind of practice, the letting go of control, basically we start to learn how to be mindful. Learn how to stay present with a much broader range of experience. Actually, with the full range of our experience. Ultimately, the full range of our experience. And yet without being the one who's choosing what we are aware of, very often in this kind of practice, things come into our experience that are not comfortable. And so the other skill that we learn with this second kind of practice, so there's the letting go of control piece, and there is this a really helpful skill that we need to learn is, can we be comfortable being uncomfortable? Can we learn how to be comfortable with feelings that come through that don't feel very good? Can we learn how to be comfortable with bodily experience that doesn't necessarily feel very good? So this learning how to be comfortable with the uncomfortable, one of the things that we need to do here is, well, first of all, it's helpful to just recognize that it's possible to be uncomfortable with comfortable with the uncomfortable. Something wisdom that helps, a bit of wisdom that helps with this, is to know that it's not a mistake when there are uncomfortable things that happen in our meditation. It's not a mistake. It's not a mistake when there are uncomfortable things that happen in our lives. It's partly just the way life is. Life throws things that are uncomfortable at us. It throws things that are comfortable at us. It throws things that are neutral at us. And so getting to the place where we can be okay with that flow of range, that range of experience, is kind of the place of stability. Because pretty much our reactivity leaps off of when things are uncomfortable, we go into various habitual patterns. If things are comfortable, we also can go into habitual patterns of like thinking, oh, this is the way it's supposed to be. How can I keep this? How? And we can get lost when things are comfortable too. But I think, you know, the uncomfortable terrain is a really helpful terrain to begin to explore and to notice what your habitual patterns are around discomfort. You might have my habitual patterns. I mean, I would say there could be three basic habitual patterns. One that's kind of out of an aversive mode, one that's out of a greedy mode, and one that's out of a confused mode of mind. So out of an aversive mode, this is the one I have the most experience with. This is, my mind has a very strong tendency towards the aversive side of things. That when something's uncomfortable, the first movement of my mind is, how can I fix this? How can I change this? How can I get rid of it? That's the first movement. If I don't think I'm able to do that, the next movement is going to be, how can I get out of here? How can I get myself out of this situation? Another response, if I can neither get myself out of the situation or fix it, could be an emotional response like anger or frustration. So all of those habitual responses to uncomfortable. It's possible, I was actually noticing this earlier today, something was going on and my mind and body were both uncomfortable. I think actually when I did the full exploration, I realized I was really tired. I actually needed a nap. But I wasn't in a situation where I could take a nap at that time, but I was really tired. And the mind was in, it was in, it hadn't really noticed that it was tired, but whatever it was meeting, you know, it was meeting stuff in the world, and it was all a problem. It seemed like everything was a problem, and my mind was in this fix-it mode. It was in this, oh, I gotta fix this. And noticing that fix-it mode coming in, I recognized the very response to that discomfort, the discomfort I was feeling, was itself uncomfortable. The fix-it mode itself felt out of balance. It felt unstable. And so as I recognized that fix-it mode piece would fall out for a while, and I would recognize, oh, I'm tired, and I don't like it. Okay, that's what's happening. And so there was that recognition, okay, tired and not liking. The not liking itself is a subtle reaction also. It's a push-away reaction, but it's nowhere near as problematic, especially when seen, as the whole kind of churning of the mind of how can I fix this? How can I change this? How can I get rid of this situation? So there was the mind, and it was, you know, tired and not liking it. And every now and then, the not liking would actually fall, and it's just like, oh, tired, it's tired, and no problem. So, you know, beginning to explore your habitual responses to discomfort, you can start to learn. And this to me, this takes some skill. It takes some practice to learn to be comfortable with discomfort. Sometimes that discomfort can trigger a response of, I'd say roughly people have, you know, in response to discomfort, people basically either want to do something to actively get rid of the discomfort, want to create something pleasant in their environment so they don't have to pay attention to the discomfort. That might be something like a fantasy. Or they basically want to check out. And so these are the three responses of an aversive reaction, a greedy reaction, or a delusional reaction to discomfort. So, you know, either you want to get rid of it, fix it, change it, get angry, get out of here. You want to find something pleasant. You know, it's like, oh, don't have to pay attention to that. Let me pay attention. That's much more pleasant. I can just ignore that and pay attention to that. So it's kind of a shift attention and move towards something pleasant. Now, that doesn't necessarily have to be a problem. But if your mind goes out that door and loses presence of mind, that's where that movement is a problem. When we lose touch with reality, when we lose touch with that, what's actually going on, when we escape through the door of, give me something pleasant, I can't deal with this. And likewise, the confusion, you know, just the checking out. Often that's a checking out without awareness. So again, we, in this exploration of meeting the present moment, noticing, oh, this is what's happening, this is what's happening, noticing where we're uncomfortable, we start to see the habits of our mind, and we're also cultivating the skill to begin to meet more and more different kinds of experiences. Different people will have different levels of comfort with these two methods, the method of picking something and staying with it, or just kind of checking in, what's happening now? Can I be with this? Oh, can I be with this? Can I be with this? Certain people seem more comfortable with one or the other. There's no right way. It's not like one is better, or you have to do the first, you have to do the stay with one object until the mindfulness gets strong enough to let go of that, to pay attention to a broader range of experience. For some minds, that's an appropriate avenue. For other minds, it may be more appropriate to start with the, you know, just receiving, just, oh, what's here? Can I just be here? Some people have a very natural sense of what it means to just be present and can kind of hang out there and then find a way to begin to use that sense of relaxed presence to begin to pay attention to individual experiences. I think both sides, both skills cultivated on both sides are useful. I actually think that for the practice to fully deepen, we do need to cultivate both sides. We do need to have skills on both sides. We need to both be able to pick an experience and be able to attend to it and investigate it and explore it. We also need to be able to receive and kind of be non-reactive to just the flow of life experience, just the flow of what's going on in our lives. And so whichever, you know, you may find one more easeful than the other. You may find neither one more easeful. I mean, sometimes it's all hard. But in any case, finding a way in, finding a doorway that feels somewhat comfortable for you. It's like all the doorways into the practice, they all meet in the middle somewhere. For myself, I did very much start with the one-pointed practice, with the paying attention to one thing, and then my teachers began to encourage me to open up and let go and just be with more of the flow of experience. And then I discovered that I could take the skill of being with that flow back to being, because the first years of my practice in being with the breath were very much gripped on the breath. It was very tight and very controlling. And so I really need to learn what it meant to let go of control. And then bringing that letting go of control back into receiving the breath. So I found my way from the open awareness that it found a bridge back to the paying attention to one experience. And so they're both sides of the skill set are helpful. They both help to cultivate this stabilized mind in their own way, cultivate different aspects of the stability of mind. And then there are some methods there's kind of these in-between methods. methods. So I roughly laid out the ends of the spectrum, you know, attending to one experience, let go of anything not that, or opening to a flow of changing experience. There's a range of possibility in the middle, and we did explore some of that in the guided meditation. The one that I suggested of, you know, you're with the breath, and yet you don't have to, like, ignore everything else. It's like, yeah, well, there's sound in the breath. So that this begins to expand the awareness. But it can keep, if you need something to help you remember what it is to be here, or to have that touchstone of a reminder, oh yes, moment to moment, just stay with the breath, stay with the breath. That if that helps to tether you to the present moment, that can be very skillful. So there's this kind of a range of in-between tools as well. So, comments, questions, reflections on this theme might be something you've noticed in your meditation, questions about the guided meditation, something you experienced, question about something I said, anything at all.
I'm curious where you put the metta practice in this set of, because that seems to, for me, that's one of my strategies.
That's one of your doorways?
Yeah, that's one of my doorways.
Yeah, so the metta practice, I would say, is in the realm of picking an experience and staying with it. You're using your mind to direct the attention towards the cultivation of metta. And initially, it's with the phrases, that you're allowing the mind to connect with the phrases and the intention behind those phrases. So it's in the terrain of the picking an experience and cultivating that. So, yeah. Thank you for that question. And there's different ways to practice the metta, too, actually. The metta that I just described, and I'll just say this briefly, the basic metta practice that we often teach here, and probably will be taught in Dawn's class next week, is this, it's kind of an expanding. You start with yourself and you begin wishing yourself well, using phrases, may I be happy, may I be healthy, may I be safe, may I live with ease. And so this becomes a kind of a, you come back to that. That's your experience that you come back to. And if your mind wanders, you just come back to those phrases. You come back to connecting with the being, yourself in this case, and the phrases and the intention that those phrases mean. You know, it's not just like a mantra, may I be happy, may I be healthy. You're actually connecting with the meaning of those phrases, and that's where it begins to connect with the quality of metta itself. And so that's, then you move out to choosing other beings, a benefactor, a dear friend, a neutral person, a difficult person, and then moving out towards all beings. And so that practice feels more like the concentration style of picking one experience. I did learn another form of metta practice from Bhikkhu Anālio, which feels much more to me like open awareness practice. And that was to basically get a sense of metta, basically to start with whatever can give you a sense of a feeling of metta, and then just see if you can let that move outward into space. And whatever it meets, it touches. And so you're cognizant both of the feeling and what it touches. And so it's got much more of a quality of relationship in the moment with what's around you, what's being experienced. And so I found that to be a very interesting practice. I could explore that with you guys next week if you're interested. It's a very fun. Okay, I'll do that next week. We'll do metta next week, and I'll introduce both of those. So that radiating kind of metta, to me, it basically ended up feeling like open awareness with love. it was so juicy. You know, it's just like whatever happens, it's just met with love. So I there are different forms of the metta practice on that spectrum also.
I guess the one that I've worked with is trying to not only have the thought but the emotion,
yes,
present, and you know that's a challenge.
The instruction that I've heard is to not to try to create the feeling, but to see if it's available. So you know to see, you know, when you bring a person into your mind, is it available that there's a, sometimes it is, sometimes it's for a flash. Like for a while I was doing metta for one of my teachers as a benefactor, and when I created an image of her, just for a split second, whew, there was the feeling of that. And so then that was like to connect to that feeling and to see if the phrase, may you be happy, may you be healthy, could somehow connect to that feeling. So that, you know, if you're trying to construct the feeling, it can get pretty exhausting, that practice. But if you can just, and what I also discovered is that if you in saying the phrase, you know, may I be happy, if you just connect with what that means, you know, that gives you just a tiny bit of intention towards the wholesome quality of metta. The wish itself, may I be happy, is a wish for well-being. And that is metta. That wish itself is metta. And so sometimes if you can just recognize that what you're saying is an expression of metta, even if it's not really deeply felt, you're connecting essentially with the intention there to move in that direction. And if you're connecting with the intention over and over again, it does move in that direction. It's kind of remarkable. So I would encourage you to not try to create the feeling. Yeah. Thank you. Anyone else? Comments or questions? Did any of you in the last part of the guided meditation, I'm curious what you experienced there, where I asked you to open up. Was that possible? Did you have a sense of what I meant by opening up there? Anybody willing to share what happened there? Sure. Great.
When you suggested that we open up our awareness a little bit, I started hearing, you know, I hadn't even been aware of any kind of sounds in the room at all, and I started to hear things.
And you could stay with the breath and mm-hmm. the hearing together?
Yeah, mm-hmm. that was nice.
Yeah, sometimes what I've seen for myself when I do that, it's like it actually kind of loosens the tightness around the attention to the breath. To be taking in other experiences so that it can create much more of a sense of ease with that experience. Great. And you notice the peacefulness. That's great. Anyone else? Yeah.
I sort of, when you asked us to open ourselves up, so many things are occurring.
Yes, it's amazing.
And there's almost a quickness in my mind of there's hearing and there's this sensation of pain and there's this sensation here and there's a lot happening.
Did it feel pretty relaxed? Or did it feel like the mind was kind of like, oh, there's this and this and this and this?
It felt fast.
It felt fast. Yeah.
Not particularly, I wouldn't say it was stressful.
Uh-huh.
But it, I don't.
It's kind of amazing how much
relaxing,
there was.
But it's just so full.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And so sometimes that can be
tiring.
That can feel confusing, and sometimes it can just be like, wow, that's amazing. So you know, it sounds more like it was the latter, that is like, oh, this is the mind can do this. And this is something that we also begin to see with this more open awareness practice, just how fast the mind works. And it's like, there's no way you could control that, right? There's no way you could decide, oh, I'll get this and this and this and this. It's like, when you let go, the mind does it. And so that letting go of control frees the mind, really, to be able to really witness what is already happening. So thank you. Thank you for that. And it's time to stop. Thank you all. Metta next week.